You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time, and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Drop us a line. Texts, voicemails, we'd love to hear from you. 331-979-1369. Not going to waste any time for you, Bulls Nation. It's Friday. Stay warm if you're here in the city of Chicago or the surrounding areas. It is freezing out there. Matt and I talk about it. We are freezing our asses off today. Without further ado, we got a great guest on for you today. Spent almost an hour with Darnell Mayberry from The Athletic. You can follow Darnell on Twitter at Darnell Mayberry. All of his coverage of the Chicago Bulls over at The Athletic. Today's The Athletic's birthday. 3 years ago today, The Athletic started and it has exploded across the country and worldwide. So happy birthday to The Athletic, not only The Athletic Chicago, but across the nation. So we talked to Darnell about all of his articles, everything from Chris Dunn to Zach LaVine to Jim Boylan to Lauri Markkanen and so much more. So without further ado, here is Darnell Mayberry.
Right now, we're very pleased to welcome back to Locked On Bulls, Darnell Mayberry, Bulls senior writer for The Athletic Chicago. Get all of his great Bulls coverage by subscribing to The Athletic. If you aren't already, you should be. Follow him on Twitter at Darnell Mayberry. Darnell, good morning, bud. How you doing?
Doing well. How you guys doing?
We're hanging in there as best we can, all things considered, with the current Chicago temperatures and the temperature of this Bulls franchise right now. Let's start with your most recent column that you put out this morning for The Athletic, talking about Chris Dunn and the upcoming decision the Bulls have to make about whether or not to maybe put him, put some feelers out to see if they can get something for him before the deadline. If they decide that he is not, in fact, the point guard of the future. He's had an up-and-down year with some really bad games and a couple of decent games. What do you think the Bulls should do? Do you think that we have seen enough from Dunn to know he's not the guy to lead this team at the point guard spot moving forward and look to trade him?
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing with Chris right now is that three-point shot. When he doesn't have the ball, he's such a liability on offense. When Zach and Lauri have it, that you just kind of wonder how much more can he provide and how much is he really going to be the point guard of the future, really and truly, if he can't knock down shots with consistency and he's not even taking them with confidence right now. So I think that's the biggest surprise about Chris Dunn coming into this season, at least for me, is that I thought he would continue to show progress and make strides as a shooter, and he just hasn't done that. And You know, we still know he has ball security issues. He's got decision-making issues. He's getting better at those two things, but his shooting just doesn't seem like a fit with Zach and Lauri. And I'm starting to wonder more and more how much the front office is looking at that and really understanding that that might not be a great fit long term.
Darnell, what do you think the value is for Chris Dunn on a trade market, especially with 2 weeks coming up here at the trade deadline? Obviously, if they don't move him now, then you have to wait till this summer, and then this summer would be probably a time where you could move him then. But the value here, I think, is certainly if you have 34 games to evaluate whether or not he can still be a part of this team, but the value now is that kind of decision-making time. So what do you think the value is right now for him here, and is the value at the highest point it will be? And does the 34 games between now and summertime change at all? Could it decline a ton from then till the summertime? Is that something that the Bulls are seriously considering in 2 weeks' time?
Yeah. So to me, he's not having a great season. I mean, he's been decent, but he hasn't been great by any means. And you could even argue that it's in some ways worse than the season last year. So we all expected Chris to make this jump in his third season. And you know, obviously he had the knee injury. He missed the first two games because of the birth of his first child. And, you know, they've had the coaching change. So there's a lot of variables. But I think, you know, from a league perspective, I'm not sure the word is out yet that Chris Dunn's not having a great season or not making his jump that he was expected to make. You know, I think maybe the league is looking at all of the other factors with this team right now and probably not paying as much attention to what Chris is actually doing or not doing, for that matter. And I do think his value probably right now is as high as it's going to be, because if he continues this way and we don't see anything in this Jim Boylan era so far that proves otherwise, that it won't continue this way, then his value is going to decrease. I do think that. There's still time, 34 games left in the year, whatever it is, for his value to decrease and for guys to not look good. Zach LaVine talked about it at practice. Excuse me, guys, after that Hawks game, you know, these guys' reputations are on the line as well. And I even put in that article that we're talking about, Zach was quoted back in December as saying people start evaluating. So, you know, you look at a 10-game losing streak, you look at all of the chaos going on with this team right now, you start to ask questions, and at some point people are going to start digging in and saying that Chris Dunn is not making his jump. So with the trade deadline 2 weeks away, it does seem to me that without a ton of other assets, Chris Dunn might be their most tradable asset.
We want to get to LaVine's recent comments. And before we do that, though, because we're talking about the upcoming trade deadline, there are a few other pieces of this Bulls roster right now that you mentioned in that column this morning. Of course, we know that when it comes to Jabari Parker and Robin Lopez, the Bulls are open to taking calls about either of those players, but because of their salaries, it would be really hard for the Bulls to get a real asset, just as far as matching the $20 million that Jabari has on the books and $14 million for Rolo. The other piece that Bulls fans continue to talk about as we get to the deadline is Bobby Portis, who it's crazy to think that in training camp he beat out Jabari Parker for the starting power forward spot on this team. And now here we are. He's had a couple of different injuries to deal with that really disrupted his season. We were talking about him being a sixth man kind of guy, at least if the Bulls were a better team, being that kind of guy. That clearly didn't happen for Bobby this season. We know that he turned down a fairly lucrative deal that the Bulls gave him last summer, deciding to bet on himself over a difference of, I don't know, maybe somewhere around $10 or $12 million over a four-year deal. It looks like that deal and that money is not going to happen for Bobby given the season that he's having. Would you look to trade Bobby Portis as well? And what kind of value do you think the Bulls might get for Bobby, knowing that they kind of have their front court of the future already in place with Wendell and Lauri Markkanen?
Yeah, I love Bobby's game. I don't love everything about it, obviously, but I do love what he brings, especially in a reserve in a reserve role. But they have a hell of a decision to have to make, because as you said, you've got Laurie in place, you've got Wendell in place. How much value does Bobby then have, and how much does that cost? And I think that's the big question for these guys. I think he does a lot for this team. I know he has his flaws, but I think he can help. And I think from what I've seen over the last 2 years, everyone piles on Bobby because of the Miritich incident. But every time I see him in the locker room, you know, he's keeping guys' spirits high. He's keeping guys focused on positive thoughts and not, you know, swerving and going off the reservation and letting it all out. So, I mean, in fact, the other night there was a player who was kind of griping to him openly while some of us were still standing in there from the media. And Bobby was just kind of like, you know, let it go. And he was trying to be a veteran leader. You know, I don't think it was an act. I think that was really Bobby doing what he tries to do on a daily basis, with or without us around. And I think that brings tremendous value in addition to his shot making, you know, his rebounding, whatever you want to say, that he does do well on the court. So how much is that all going to cost, and is it worth it to the Bulls? That's the big question, but I do think he has value.
Shifting from what the Bulls could possibly get in the trade market and anything that might go on in the next 2.5 weeks or so, going to the comments that have been made over the last few weeks, and there's been a ton of them. It seems like every single day, and maybe even hours, every single hour, there's different comments that are made. I want to go specifically to Zach LaVine, because the comments that have been made, maybe even yesterday, the ones after the Heat loss specifically, you asked a question to Zach LaVine that I think sparked a lot of interest from fans and sparked some emotions from fans too. Can you talk to us a little bit about how Zach LaVine has been feeling, specifically about those comments that he made about how the team hasn't been playing well, and you know, it's not about the effort that these guys are putting out there, and sometimes it's more than that. You know, Jim Boylan keeps harping about their toughness and their effort and this grit and this grind and these intangibles, and it's not necessarily about the X's and O's and all of this. Sometimes it comes down to more than that, and we're all giving our best effort out there, but it's more than that. Sometimes we just don't have the talent here. What are you noticing from those comments? Since, you know, every time I feel like Jim Boylan speaks, Zach LaVine comes out and says something that seems like it's directly opposite of what Jim Boylan is saying. And it doesn't seem like it's firing shots at Boylan, but I don't think Bulls fans or anybody that's paid attention to this team all season long is stupid and realizes that those comments are directly opposite of what Boylan is saying. So can you kind of fill us in on what your opinion is from hearing what Zach LaVine has said and the questions that you've asked and followed up with him on?
Yeah, I think in short, I would probably sum it up like this. Just like the fans, Zach LaVine isn't stupid. And I think Zach LaVine can see that Jim Boylan's probably not going to be here for the duration of Zach LaVine's contract. You know, who knows how long he will be here, but I think Zach understands that he's not going to be here for the most part, more than likely, for the duration of Zach's contract. So I think he kind of feels like this is all a bunch of wasted time, perhaps. I want to talk to Zach more about this, too, because, you know, here's a guy who's coming off the big high-dollar contract extension, got a lot of criticism for that, came out, started the season extremely well, I think proved a lot of people wrong, and, you know, really has started to make a name for himself as something more than a dunker. And now here he is kind of regressing and not looking the part at this point, and he's supposed to be one of the faces of the franchise and one of the leaders of the team. And he looks at himself as one of the best players in the game and, you know, trying to become, you know, the best. So there's a lot with Zach LaVine, but now this team is one of the worst in the league, and you know, that falls on him as well. And I'm curious to know more about what he feels that says about him, and how he sees all of it. But I do think that he thinks that they should be playing a certain way, and they're not playing that way, and there's a lot of things that just don't make sense right now. And the thing that doesn't make sense to me right now is that Jim Boylan is making these guys play with sort of training wheels, and this isn't a roster, even though it is, what, the youngest in the league or second youngest, whatever it is now after the holiday trade. Zach LaVine's in his fifth year. Chris Dunn's in his third year. Larry's in his second year. You know, you've got guys out there who have experience. I understand Hutchinson and Wendell are rookies, but you've got guys who've got experience. So why make them play at such a basic level as opposed to trying to speed it up or accelerate the learning curve and the growth and the development? So I think there's just a lot of things that Zach doesn't understand right now and he's trying to make sense of. But I think deep down he understands that this is all a part of a master plan, and Jim Boylan is probably not going to be here for the duration of his contract, so he might just feel like this is like a lot of wasted time.
Darnell, I feel like LaVine, and to his credit, I feel like he has been more willing than any of his teammates to vocally express his frustrations with what's going on right now. And as much as even in yesterday's practice media session, you know, him saying, well, you know, Boylan's the coach, so we got to go by what coach tells us to do. You can tell that there's a disconnect between LaVine and Boylan and how Boylan is asking LaVine to operate in this offense and how to run this offense in general. Simultaneously, I feel like, you know, Jordan and I talk about how there's a big part of the Bulls fan base is giving LaVine a lot of heat for not being as good of a player as we want him to be. And a guy who doesn't make his teammates better and isn't great facilitator and is a selfish guy on the offensive end and takes bad shots and et cetera, et cetera. I think Jordan and I are not necessarily on that boat. And I think that we are trying to give LaVine a little bit of a break considering what he was asked to do with this team to start the season when all of the other guys were hurt. And now the fact that instead of having the green light he had under Fred Hoiberg, as you mentioned, Boylan is just making this offense grind itself to a halt and put the training wheels on it, however you want to call it. Do you see LaVine as a guy who can be face of the franchise, leader of a team, not only with the, you know, the leader in the locker room stuff and, you know, insert joke about leadership committee, but also a guy who can be the best player on this team? Because I think Bulls fans wonder, is LaVine the best guy on this team, or is Markkanen the most talented guy on this team? And it seems like there's a lot of heat on LaVine from the fan base right now, and I don't know if that's necessarily deserved given what he has to work with right now. What's your take on LaVine and his potential?
You know, it's funny because every time I write an article and I mention the phrase best player, you know, I always think, is it Larry? Is it Zach? Is it Larry? Is it Zach? I think it's Zach. You know, Larry, I think, has the most versatility. I think he's got the higher ceiling, perhaps, because of his versatility. But I think right now, I don't think it's a question that Zach is a better scorer. Larry's not known as a defender, and we know, you know, Zach's not a defender, a great overall defender. So I think Zach is the best player on the team. But I think Larry's got the best potential, the most potential. There's a lot, I think, that is interesting about Zach. Like, where would you want me to start, Matt?
I mean, like, do you think he can be the 1A type of player on a team that's a real contender?
I mean, no. I mean, he's not Kevin Durant. He's not LeBron James. He's not Kawhi Leonard. He's not Steph Curry. You know, he's not Anthony Davis. Those are your five, he's not James Harden. Those are your, like, five, six, seven guys. He's not Giannis. There's only, like, eight guys in the league who I look at as that type of a player. So maybe I'm a little different. I don't know, but no, I don't, and that's not a knock against Zach LaVine. He's still, what, 23 years old. You know, he's got a lot of room for improvement, and I do think he'll continue to improve. But as of right now, would you, if you're asking me, do I think he's like your centerpiece to build a championship team around? No. And that's, I think, why everyone wants Zion Williamson and hope that he's that guy. But I don't see him as that guy because I see only a handful of guys in this league who are that guy.
About Zach, do you think does he realize some of this about his game? Like, obviously he's mentioned too that, like, through the 10-game skid that they had, he flat out said it, "I sucked." Like, that was his quote. So he obviously realizes that part of his game has been bad. And a lot of the things that he's done early on in the season, he's gotten a pass for and said that he's had to do a lot. But Bulls fans have been crushing him for having to come out in the media and back up his guys. And I said it yesterday, too, though, when the quotes came out. It's like, he's the only guy I feel like on this team that has any ounce of clout right now with any all-star around this league that would come here in any type of the future. That would come here to play for the Bulls, you know, or he could be any type of recruiter to bring any type of guy here. So if he doesn't come here to save any of these guys that are here on the team or stick up for his guys now, like, who else is going to do that? So to me, maybe he does deserve a little bit of the criticism for the type of play he's had on the floor over the last 2 months, and that's fair. But at the same time, to crush him for coming out to the media and sticking up for himself and sticking up for his guys when, in turn, the guy that's coaching the team isn't really taking accountability for anything that he's done and wants the players to take accountability, I don't think is really fair either. So I think there's two sides to the coin here. So does Zach realize, even if Jim Boylen is out at the end of the year, that there are some strides that he needs to make in his game still and that he's not at that all-star level just yet? Is there some realization his game that you're seeing, in your opinion?
Yeah, I really give Zach a lot of credit this year for how he's tried to come out and really transform his game and take the next step in terms of playing a mature game. It's not always pretty with Zach, and he's the first to tell you that. You know, he owns it and has said from the start that he needs to be a better defender. He's come out and he's tried to put more of a focus on being a better defender. You know, I know now that we're, you know, 45, 40, however many games into the season, that it's all piling up and it all just looks bad. But we can't lose sight of the fact that there were some really good moments already, and there continues to be some good moments individually by some of these guys. And Zach started the season really trying to lock in defensively and be committed to being a better defender. You know, his shot selection, I've noted that all season, that he's turned down good shots while trying to seek great shots. And you guys brought up a point earlier, I think it was Matt who said, you know, he had that green light under Fred Hoiberg, but he still tried to look for great shots. He took a lot of tough shots and made them, but he still tried to turn down good shots to find great shots. And even when the system changed and now he's being asked to slow it down, you can see him not just jacking up shots by and large. I mean, he still does that a little bit, but for the most part, he's not just going out there jacking up shots. He's trying to get everyone involved. His assist numbers have been fairly good this season, even under Jim Boylen. So he's getting, I think he's trying to get teammates involved and play the system that Jim's trying to play. So he's had to do a lot of different things this year, and I give him a lot of credit for what he's done and the way he's had to do it. But there's no doubt he's frustrated with what's going on right now with this team and this franchise.
We're talking with Darnell Mayberry, who covers the Bulls for The Athletic here on Locked On Bulls. Darnell, another one of your pieces from earlier this week that I really enjoyed was your Q&A session with Bulls forward Lauri Markkanen, who, you know, we're talking about who is the future of this team, and you know, is Zach the guy or is Lauri the guy? I feel like if there's one real frustration I have with the Boylan Bulls right now, it is the what looks like regression of Lauri Markkanen in his second season. And, you know, we have heard he admitted recently in an interview with a Finnish media source that the elbow actually has given him a little bit more trouble than maybe he anticipated. And yes, he came back, but he still was not really 100% healthy. It was kind of affecting his shot a little bit. And maybe that is a contributing factor to Markkanen having what some are calling a down year. I'm curious, though, as to what you see as Markkanen on the floor and the specific sets that the Bulls are running and what Boylen is running, and maybe that being part of the reason why Markkanen has really not flourished and possibly even regressed, because you see Markkanen having mismatch opportunities and those mismatch opportunities go unrecognized countless times. I mean, I have watched every single Bulls game so far this season, and I'm sitting there yelling at my TV saying, I don't know if it's Boylen, I don't know if it's Dunn or Levine, you know, if it's Markkanen's teammates on the floor. If Boylen is so obsessed with trying to outscore his opponents in the post, and that's a different laughable matter, and getting all these looks for Robin Lopez in the post, it's like, okay, well, Robin Lopez is not a part of your core moving forward. If you want to get some things in the post, for the love of God, let Markkanen get those touches. Do you think it is Markkanen not being aggressive enough and demanding the ball, or do you think it is a schematic coaching thing that is preventing Markkanen from really getting that work done this season?
Hey Jordan.
Yeah.
Why didn't you tell me this would get Matt fired up, man? It brought it out of him.
I can't help it, Darnell. I'm running out of patience, man.
Yeah, I can tell. I think it's a mixture of all the above, though. I mean, I do think it starts with Lauri. Like, no matter what they do schematically, no matter what the teammates do, no matter who you put out there, Lauri's got to be more aggressive. I don't care if you throw, you know, Jason Kidd out there with LeBron and, Magic Johnson. Like, Lauri's got to be more aggressive demanding the ball, and he's got to be more aggressive and more assertive, in his attack, and he's got to be a stronger finisher. He's got to do all of those things. There's no denying that. At the same time, yes, his teammates got to do a better job of getting him the ball. I was rewatching the first quarter Heat because of this Chris Dunn piece. I was going to use some of that stuff in there. And Lauri had a mismatch. He had Tyler Johnson on him on the left block, and the shot clock was kind of going down. Chris had it on the wing, and instead of getting the ball to Lauri, he put his head down and got to the basket. I think he got fouled. I think he missed, and Lauri came and cleaned it up. But he just couldn't get the ball to Lauri on the mismatch. And I'm like, this happens too much on this team. So they've got to get someone in here who knows how to feed the post and some better guard play. And then the schemes have got to be better. I think they got to be able to speed up the pace, let him get some easy buckets in transition, run some more action. I actually liked what Fred Hoiberg did with Lauri. He ran a lot of nice sets for Lauri to get him some good looks. And Lauri, you know, at times struggled with some consistency with his shot making last season when he was doing it. But he was a rookie, and we all thought he was going to break out of that, and it was only a matter of time. So I do think it's a mix of all three, that Lauri's got to be more aggressive, the teammates have got to be better in finding him, and the schemes and the tactics have got to be better in getting him better looks.
You know, with all the negativity going on with this team, I need one bright spot here. So I'll ask you an offended question really quick. Reading through your Q&A with Lauri, it came up with a funny question here. You asked him about if there's something that maybe makes him upset, or if there's something that gets him upset or a little bit cranky. And it reminded me of a perfect sponsorship deal that he should maybe do. You know, the Snickers commercial that they've run where, you know, you're a little cranky, maybe have a Snickers. Yeah. That is perfect. In your article, you said, you know, he doesn't get angry at his father when he was learning how to drive. And anybody who doesn't know what I'm talking about, that's not subscribed to The Athletic, go do that right now. You should be reading Darnell Mayberry immediately. But I don't know if there's any more perfect of a scenario of getting him a sponsorship deal, but Snickers get on that for Lauri Markkanen in the NBA. But that was funny, and it perfectly encapsulates everything that I think Lauri Markkanen can be, a soft-spoken guy in the NBA and flying in under the radar. And I think that's what's been talked about since he's been a rookie. And, you know, the younger generation of NBA fans and people here in Chicago realized that about Lauri, realized that a little bit about him last year throughout the summer and some of the viral tweets that he's had, social media posts that he's had. But for the most part, and especially because of the injury and the games that he's missed and maybe some of the struggles and the highlights that haven't gone viral of him, it has diminished a little bit of his popularity nationally across the league, but there's still something. He's got a personality there, and it just hasn't bursted maybe like some of the other NBA stars around here, but there is there. Can you see it? Can you see the personality in Lauri Markkanen, and can you see it starting to maybe flourish as he grows in the NBA and as the years start to progress?
Yeah, I'm starting to see it a little bit, you know, more and more at a time. But, you know, he jokes with me a little bit, you know, just lighthearted things, nothing major. He doesn't like that I'm a Michigan fan. I wear my Michigan gear proudly to practice.
I don't like that either, though.
Who are you a fan
of? I graduated from Indiana, so I don't like that you're a Michigan fan either.
Okay. All right. Well, you guys are irrelevant, so it doesn't really matter right now. You know what I mean? Like,
that hurts.
Darnell calling it like it is.
Yeah, well, they've lost five in a row, so we don't need to talk about that. They're just as miserable as this Bulls team is. So.
Yeah. So Lauri doesn't like when I wear my Michigan gear. You know, he's a big Arizona guy. He actually got a new Arizona. I don't know if it's new, but I hadn't seen him wear it before a couple weeks back. But got a nice little Arizona, like, Letterman jacket. It's really nice. So I see his personality a little bit in times like that. But as soon as the cameras come on, he immediately dries up. And I'm thinking, Lauri, why don't you give us that on camera? Why don't you, you know, show us that a little bit more? And I just think it's fascinating how he's the forgotten man from that 2017 draft class. And I get it to a large degree because the Bulls are terrible, but at the same time, it's like you do have a budding star in Chicago of all places, and he just doesn't seem to get a lot of recognition.
The other really cool piece that you did recently, Darnell, was the kind of like the long form detailed saga of campaign in Chicago, who the Bulls recently waived in that first move they made with the Rockets to create a spot for and then to waive Michael Carter Williams. You used to cover the Oklahoma City Thunder, so you've known Cam for a while. And I thought it was really interesting. Like, there were a lot of Bulls fans in the comment section of that piece on The Athletic saying, this is cool. This is a different side of Cam that we didn't really see before, to explain, you know, the player who we all know is just the butt end of a joke as soon as he arrived in Chicago. And there were some people commenting saying, like, why the hell are we, you know, why are we writing 10,000 word columns on campaign? Like, the guy stinks. He's gone. Get over it. But Jordan and I both really loved it because it kind of highlighted and from Cam and the people in his close circle that he was dealt a terrible hand as soon as he arrived. Not only was he the guy who came in and was the reason the Bulls fans had to say goodbye to one of their favorites, Taj Gibson, and also not like Doug McDermott was ever a huge fan favorite here in Chicago, but Bulls fans, as you were saying earlier, aren't stupid, and Bulls fans know Doug may not have been a great guy or a great player, but he is a player that signified the Bulls giving up two first-round picks, right? They gave away the rights to Gary Harris and Yusuf Nurkic to get Doug in that draft. So combining that value and Taj Gibson, his value as a player and his value as a fan favorite, kind of, you know, gave Cam the short end, the shortest straw, and then he was hurt as soon as he arrived. And there was the joke about the Bulls also giving OKC a draft pick in that trade, which made no sense to anybody. And I think that there, you know, your piece did a really good job of highlighting the fact that, yes, Cam didn't do himself any favors based on his play and the fact that he wasn't really healthy, but the guy was just dealt an awful hand when he arrived. Is that kind of what you were trying to get through in that piece, to kind of tell the other side of that story?
Yeah, you know, it's unfortunate that he got waived, and let me back up. It's unfortunate that I procrastinated on the piece, because the whole thing was intended to be a different type of story. It was similar. I just repurposed it after he got waived. But I wanted to do a story before he got waived, when he was still on the team, about how he's Chicago's biggest punching bag and how he became that and why he is that. And, you know, just the story of Cameron Payne and his plight, and, you know, how a former lottery pick has fallen on such hard times. Because that's the thing I think is fascinating. People, you know, kind of forget that he was a lottery pick. You know, maybe Bulls fans don't forget it. I mean, I just think, like you said, losing Taj Gibson for this guy is what people are pissed off about. But I think lost in that is that he is a former lottery pick, and he's got a little bit of an interesting story. But his background was one that I just thought was worth telling, because he never really had a great opportunity because of the injuries. And that's something that I thought was lost on a lot of Bulls fans, because he'd been hurt since day one with a thumb going back to the pre-draft workout with Denver. That stunted his growth. It made him miss summer league his first season. And then he had a foot, and then the foot injury started. So, I just thought all of that was fascinating. And when I've never seen a player, so reviled as Cameron Payne was when he was here in Chicago. Maybe you guys have some other examples you could point to from Bulls fans, but I thought it was interesting, and coming in with fresh eyes, I just thought, like, I wanted to write about this. So, that's what it turned into after he was waived, and kind of more of an explanation of what the front office was thinking, why they made it, and then telling the story of a little bit. I didn't go into a lot of what I wanted to originally, but I do think that, you know, it was able to tell a little bit of his story, which I know a lot of people don't care about. He wasn't a great player, and that's all that matters to some fans, but these are people. These are still people, and I wanted to tell the human side of Cameron Payne's journey.
No, and I think I appreciate that, too. I think a lot of fans out there do too, and I think even if a lot of our friends, a lot of Bulls fans go back and listen to our episode when we talked about when Cam was waived, I said this to Matt too. I said, Bulls fans can text and tweet at me. I don't care if you do. I said, you know, as much crap as Cam Payne got here, he was the punching bag. And a lot of the hate was directed towards him when really Bulls fans were angry about two different things. One, that Taj Gibson was traded away, a guy that everybody here in Chicago loved. And a lot of that hate was directed towards Gar Foreman. And Gar Foreman was part of the reason, because he touted Cameron Payne as the guy of the point guard of the future. And he doubled and tripled down on a lot of that and put these high expectations on Cam when I don't think that was very fair to Cam. And like you had mentioned, all the injuries that stacked up. And I think it was a good point too, following even back to Cam's career in college, thinking about all the expectations he had going into Murray State and following up the greatest point guard ever in college there in Isaiah Cannon, and the expectations he had to live up to there. And Bulls, he didn't play great here either. So part of it was on that too, but the way he got killed here, and it just had me thinking about the perspective of the way that we treat guys now and the overreaction that we have sometimes, and the way that social media gives fans the opportunity to just instantly react to everything and just kill guys on a daily basis. And, you know, I went back and looked at Cam's likes on Twitter and Instagram, and honestly, I will say some of that kind of made me depressed. Like, he was liking things about guys saying, go back, like, can't wait to see you in the unemployment line in 6 months. Like, little things like that. It was like, man, that's just kind of depressing. So I appreciate you writing that story, though, because I really do think people who are fans of sports need to see that human side of it. And it's not covered enough for people like that. And then people weren't seeing the cryptic, like, people saw the cryptic tweet of him when he was waived, the emoji that he sent out and then he later deleted. So appreciate that story from you. And, you know, some Bulls fans really don't care about it, and they'll double down or tweet at us and text us and say, who cares about Cameron Payne? You guys are idiots. Whatever, they can do that. But we do appreciate that story here. So thank you for writing that.
Real quick, I just want to say thanks. I appreciate you guys saying that. Glad you enjoyed it. And I think one of the reasons it really stood out to me is, you know, you guys know I'm not from Chicago. I'm not, you know, I just moved here late 2017. So, and I came here, like Cam, from Oklahoma City, and it's just such a different vibe down there with the fan base. The fan bases are totally different. And to come here and to see Bulls fans just just riding a player like they did with Cameron Payne. I think that was eye-opening for me. And so as I looked at it, I couldn't imagine what it felt like for Cameron Payne living it and having so much of that directed at him when he came from a situation where none of that existed. So I thought that dichotomy was just incredibly fascinating, especially since I made that same move from Oklahoma City to Chicago and had to adjust to a lot of new things just like Cam did. So I think that's one of the reasons why I thought that story was a little bit more interesting. Now, I'm sure your listeners are probably like, move on from Cam Payne. I'm tired of talking about Cam Payne. So sorry, guys, but that was the emphasis behind that whole thing.
No, I think it's a fair point to talk about the differences in the behaviors of the fan base. Obviously, Bulls fans are worldwide. They are insanely passionate and loyal to a fault. And I think because of the impatience and pessimism around this rebuild right now, Cam was definitely one of the biggest victims of the overall vibe of what the fan base is feeling right now. And as Jordan said, too, it's like, It's the same way that I project all of my unhappiness onto Jabari Parker, when only so much of Jabari Parker and his failed experiment is his fault, and it's really me projecting my frustration onto the front office onto the player that was brought here because of their decision. And the same goes for Cam. So, okay, before we move on from campaign, and this is a lot of campaign talk, I know, but it's fascinating stuff to me. I can't not ask you, Darnell, about the mention of my NBC Sports Bulls postgame show, Bulls Outsiders, that came up in your column about Cam, and the fact that he was he felt disrespected and or offended by a joke that we made following in our show following his miracle 7 made threes performance from earlier this season. We made a joke about it being a Bluminati thing. Like Cam was solving some puzzle, and the reason that he had such a great performance was because he had some deal with the Bluminati, which is an ongoing joke here among Bulls fans. He took Bluminati for Illuminati, I guess, and like thought that we were referring to him as like a Satanist who made a deal with the devil to have that performance, which was not what we were intending. But I have to ask, did you bring up that question to Cam to say, hey, did you see this joke that these Bulls guys made about you? Or did he offer that that opinion unsolicited?
No, that was all him, and which I know makes the story even better for you guys. But it was all him. And, you know, because, like, I was at the game. So after the game, I don't get to see you guys, your guys' show whenever I'm covering the game. You know, there are times I don't travel that I do get to see, and I love you guys' show, by the way, Matt. You guys
Thank
do a great
you.
Job.
Appreciate that.
Watch out for Fred, though. Watch out for C-Red Fred. He's coming for your spot.
Ain't no way in hell. Ain't no way in hell Fred's taking my spot.
But no, he brought it up. I asked him after, I guess it must have been a game after that. It had to be. Because all of this was done back in, you know, October or November, maybe early December. And I just said, you know, what was the toughest thing that you've heard? Because there's so much. Again, the story was supposed to be about the criticism and him being Chicago's biggest punching bag. You know, I was going to throw in examples of other sports, you know, from Cubs players, Bears players, all of that. So I just asked him, what's the toughest thing you've heard? And he's like, man, I was watching this one thing, and he wasn't really clear. He said, man, this one fan said something about my jacket and my jacket being Illuminati and all that. I'm like, okay, what are you talking about? And I wasn't even going to use it. But then I sat down with his father and his brother. And I asked them the same thing. I said, what's the toughest thing that you guys have heard? And his dad said the same thing. He brought up the show. And so I'm like, okay, I was like, I was going to follow up with Cam about this. Cam didn't say it came from your show. I got the detail that it came from your show from his brother and his dad. And they explained that they were all watching it, and that's where I got more of the material in terms of the detail. But Cam remembered it. He heard it, and he didn't like it either. And, yeah, so he watches you guys' show. So you at least had one loyal watcher in Cameron Payne.
Well, I mean, in our defense, I think our pal Kendall Gill called the campaign experiment over before we were cracking any jokes at his expense. But in that show, when we made the joke about Illuminati and his jacket, we were very complimentary of Cam. And, you know, to be fair to him, it was probably one of the few times on our show when we were complimentary of Cam, because we don't dole out compliments to people who don't deserve them. That's why we do that show, right? Because fans want real takes from fellow fans calling it like they see it. Real quick before we get off that topic, to your knowledge, does anybody else on this Bulls roster watch that show post game to feel like to see what fans have to say about their performance? And if not, you need to tell Cam's former teammates that they got to tune in, because everybody needs ratings, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, get it how you live, Matt. I was in there trying to sell Larry a subscription to The Athletic after the last game. So, I hear you, man. We're all doing the same thing. But you guys do a great job, though, man. I do love that show.
Hey, Darnell. Thanks, so before we let you go, I got to ask you about Jim Boylan. We've kind of avoided this topic. I know we brought it up a couple different times here and there.
Sure you want to get Matt's blood boiling again?
I don't know about Matt, but
it's all right. It's okay. It's okay. Go ahead. I'll just plug my ears.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know about Matt. Matt was the one that was asking about Milquetoast personality and was the first one to slam the door on Fred Hoiberg. So, I've been easy on Matt over the last 2 months or so.
I'll
we haven't
that.
Brought anything about that up. So
I still think Fred ain't it. I still think Fred ain't it.
That's
but
okay.
I will say
that's all right.
I'm not as glad now that he was fired.
We've let the door close on that issue right now. But to talk about Jim Boylan, you asked him a question, and I don't know if he interpreted it wrong, and you tried to ask him it in a way that wouldn't maybe offend him. And I don't know if he took it wrong, and it was in your nuggets from your notebook, asking if the way that things were going with the coaching staff and if there was improvements to be made. Can you kind of describe that for our listeners here without me having to read the entire thing to our listeners? So the people that aren't subscribed can go read that in full. But basically it was like, to me, I got out of it is Boylytics is what I like to call it, is that idea to me, it makes me feel like the grits, the grinds, the playing for the Bulls across your chest, and all these words that he's using, it doesn't add up. It's like, I don't understand it. And I said it yesterday when he went on the Mullion Haw show in 670, these intangibles that Paxson talked about, that's how I'm understanding why they liked Boylan and why they wanted this change. But it's not working. And it makes me understand clearer now that he's not using analytics to dive in deeper about what needs to be changed with this team. And he brought specifically up the win against Cleveland, the three wins that they've had in the last 15 games. Two of them have come against Cleveland, a team that's going to go down as historically one of the worst teams in NBA history when it's all said and done. And the other one against Washington, which that team was awful when the Bulls beat them on the road back at the late December. So can you talk to me about what he said as far as their improvement and the accountability that you've heard since he's taken over about the improvements that his coaching staff is trying to make with this team? And is there any accountability at all? And I know that the coaches don't like to throw each other under the bus, and that's not the thing that coaches usually do in the NBA. But isn't there a certain level of a coach should be holding themselves accountable if they're going to hold, they want their players to be held accountable too? And is Boylan really doing that at all here, or are you not seeing that?
Yeah, so that's how all of this started. I mean, the last game was what? Jim Boylan's 24th game. So Fred Hoiberg was canned after 24 games. The last game was Jim Boylan's 24th game, and all of this time, all I'm hearing is Jim Boylan throw guys under the bus. He's calling out their conditioning. Yep. He's calling out their toughness. He's he's benching entire you know, rotation, the entire starting five, just embarrassing them, making them do military style push-ups and all of these things, right? He's coming in heavy-handed. And everything is everyone else's, like he's pointing the finger at everyone else and he's pointing the finger at personnel. Yep. And so he did it again after that loss to the Hawks on Wednesday. And I heard grit and I heard toughness and I kind of lost it. And I'm like, okay, Jim, what are you doing to fix this thing? Like, we keep hearing about all of these other things, but we're not hearing about schemes. We're not hearing about strategies. We're not hearing about, you know, philosophies. So what are you and your staff doing? How do you know you're doing the right things to put these guys in the best positions to succeed? So, and you know, he kind of tried to downplay it, and you know, I wouldn't let him off the hook, and basically just said, "Look, you guys have lost 10 of your 24 games by double digits, 9 of those by at least 17 points, and I think 6 of those have come at home. So, this is clearly not working. What makes you confident that it is?" And so, after going round and round with him, you know, he basically pointed to they're pushing the ball well, they're pushing the ball better, the pace is better, and he feels like they're spending more time on the offense. When I asked him what areas he's seeing growth in. So that's where I'm at in this season. I understand that the Bulls at this point are tanking. They're not coming out and trying to say that they're tanking, but they want Zion Williamson or one of those Duke guys. There's no question about it. But at the same time, there still could be improvement being made with Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine and Larry Markkanen and Chandler Hutchinson as you're going about it. And I'm just not seeing any of that right now. So to me, it's time to start asking some really pointed and probing questions to the players and to the coaches. And when they speak to Gar Forman and John Paxson, because this whole thing is gone off the rails and this is a wasted season. You can't point to very many things that have gotten better since the rebuild started. And this was supposed to be a pivotal year. So I'm asking players how they've improved. I'm asking players how they've seen the team improve. I'm asking Jim Boylan in what ways does he feel like what they're doing as a staff is working. And I want some real answers. Jim Boylan spent some time yesterday at practice talking more about schemes than he ever has, talking about how they guard the pick and roll with Robin Lopez and the defense and the coverages between Lopez and Bobby Portis. And you know, that stuff was fascinating. I want to hear more about that and X's and O's and things that are actually going to help them win and lose games than hearing more about grit and toughness. So that's how all of that started. And hopefully down the stretch of these last 30, 34 games, we can see more of that stuff. And we're not just hearing about heart and toughness and grit.
Darnell, last question. I'm sorry. The one thing that I think fans consistently keep asking is, you know, with all of this, all of these comments, what's the locker room like? What's the vibe in the locker room like with all these losses stacking up? Are the players still lighthearted? Is there some depressing vibes in the locker room? Are guys still kind of upbeat because they're young? Like, what's the sense going on? Is the losses started to stack up, or is it still, there's still some sense of some camaraderie? Are these guys taking these losses, but still, is it all right for right now? But can you see a sense of this maybe potentially turning if things don't change fairly quickly?
I think the guys are really, really fed up with the losing. I think they hate losing. I'm not questioning that whatsoever. I think they get over it extremely quickly. I think they know that this is a season that's gone south, and I think they're probably counting down the days, just like we all are, because it is extremely lighthearted in the locker room, and I don't know how much of that has to do with their youth and how young and inexperienced they are. Maybe they feel like this is, you know, promised to them, and these days last forever. I don't know. But I don't think you would see this with veteran teams. You know, it's just incredibly loose after embarrassing losses at home. And that's the one thing that I just haven't liked about this team in a season and a half now. You know, you get your head kicked in. You should genuinely, to me, you know, I've never been in their shoes, but it seems like you should genuinely be hurting if you're a professional and you get paid to do this. But I just don't see that a lot from this team right now. And it just tells me that they either mentally or emotionally are checked out and are just counting down the days.
Well, it's comforting to know that the apathy of the fan base is reflected in its players right now. Is it safe to come out? Are we done talking about Jim Boylan? Darnell, thanks so much for your time, man. We appreciate it. Not only Darnell Mayberry, but also his colleague Stefan Noe do great job covering the Bulls for The Athletic. You should be subscribing. There's a reason that Jordan and I ran ads for The Athletic Chicago on this very podcast last year. It's because they do great work. Darnell's nuggets from his notebook column after pretty much every single Bulls game is great content several times a week. And of course, follow Darnell on Twitter at Darnell Mayberry. Darnell, keep up the great work through the hard times, man. The end is in sight. In the meantime, make sure you keep up that grit and that toughness and, wear that athletic across your chest proudly, okay?
Oh, man. I love it. Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, man.
Have a good one. Stay warm.
All right, guys. Hey, that was fun.
Yeah, that was great. Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Thanks to Darnell Mayberry again for jumping on the show. Fantastic coverage of this Chicago Bulls team all season long. Go subscribe to The Athletic right now. Him and Stefan Noe do a fantastic job of covering this team. So if you are not subscribed to The Athletic already, go do that right now. You can follow him on Twitter at Darnell Mayberry. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. We've got Bulls and Clippers tonight. I don't know what to expect from this game, but if you're going to enjoy that, at least stay in the comfort of your home. Go find a local bar somewhere in the city of Chicago or wherever you reside. Bulls fans, thanks for hanging out with us all week long. Be back on Monday with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com